Good evening and welcome to the first podcast for The Haunted Collection. Each week I'll be sharing some of my favorite ghost stories, horror stories, etc., etc. I hope you tune in and that you enjoy the stories as I share them. Please be sure to check out my website, www.writerkevincain.com, where you can find our store where my books are sold. Let me go ahead and introduce myself first. My name is Kevin Kane, and I am a haunted collector, a paranormal investigator, and an author. I've been investigating the paranormal since, well, most of my life. Our first story tonight is going to introduce you to the reason why I got interested in the paranormal to begin with. It happened a long time ago when I was just a child. Since then, my love for the paranormal has grown immensely. I am a paranormal investigator with the group Scare of Alabama. You can find us at our website, scareofal.com, where our team leader, Kim Johnston, takes us on different adventures investigating everything from public locations, historical locations, to private homes, where we try to help people with their paranormal issues. Which is probably my favorite part of being a paranormal investigator, is helping other people to figure out what's going on in their homes or their businesses, help them to have a better understanding of it and how to deal with it and control it. I also have several books I've published, novels and nonfiction. If you're interested in reading my books, be sure to check those out. You can buy them directly from my website, or they are located at your fine online book retailers such as Amazon.com, Books-A-Million, and Barnes & Noble. So I have been investigating the paranormal a long time. I joined Scare of Alabama in 2013. Before that, I was an amateur investigator. I went out on my own. A few investigations I did with my brother, and a few others I dared to do on my own. I have to stress, and I can't stress it enough, that you have to have the utmost respect for the places that you go to if you want to be a paranormal investigator. Do not go to places where you don't have permission. Do not trespass. And for the love of all humanity in the spirit world, please have nothing but the utmost respect for the spirits in our world. Respect them, and they will respect you. However, if you go looking for trouble, I can pretty much guarantee you will find it, or it might find you. So let's start our first episode here with the story of how I got into the paranormal investigating. I call this story Our House, because that's where it all began. At a young age of 5, I experienced my first ghostly encounter in our house. In my room at night, the light from the street lamp outside shone through my window and cast its reflection on the wall next to my bed. If anything moved past my window, its shadow was sure to cross the reflection on my wall. One particular night, I crawled under the covers and began staring at that reflection. So clear was it that you could make out the lines of the window panes like a glowing tic-tac-toe board on the wall. Suddenly, a shadow crossed the pattern and broke my stare. I looked out from under the covers at the window across the room. Nothing moved outside the window. I heard a breeze whistling around the house outside. Looking back at the reflection on the wall, I saw another shadow pass, and another, and another. More figures continued marching past in the reflection, as if figures were rushing past the windows outside, their shadows casting on my wall. I looked back at the window, but nothing stirred beyond the glass panes. Still, the shadows marched on in the reflection on my wall. Human shadows. I watched the detail of the shadows passing and noted some types of ornaments, feathers, resting on their heads. Who were these shadow people? Native Americans? If so, why could I only see them in the reflection on the wall and not through the window? When my parents bought our old house in Shady Leaves, it was a newly built house, and they were the first to reside there. The community had just been constructed in an area that once was just forest. More families moved in shortly after, and soon the community blossomed. Many children filled the community, so there was never a shortage of friends for me or my siblings to play with. My parents both shared the Christian faith and therefore raised us in the same way. The Kane family attended church every Sunday. We were very active in Sunday school, and every time the church doors were open, we were there. My dad was a deacon, and both he and my mom were Sunday school teachers. They always kept us kids financially secure as well. My dad worked for many years at the local steel plant where he worked his way to management before retiring. My mom worked as an office secretary for a doctor until an illness caused her to go on disability. Though we had our share of tough times, fights, and turmoil, we kids were loved very much. Mom always kept a clean house and prided herself on serving nothing but the best home-cooked meals. So immaculate was her cooking that my friends and the neighborhood children devised any excuse they could concoct to come to our house for supper. My particular favorite was her homemade chicken and dumplings made from scratch with a lot of love. Those were particularly good on a cold, blustery day. By all appearances, the house gave no impressions of being haunted, especially since we were the first to live in it. To many a stranger, it appeared to be a perfect dwelling place for a family, and it was. However, we weren't the only inhabitants. Something else, something sinister, dwelled within its walls. When I was 5 years old, our bedtime was always early, around 7 o'clock. This disgusted me, as I always wanted to stay up late and watch television like most children wish for. Our den was located in the downstairs of our house. The stairs that led down were blocked off by a wall, so anyone sitting in the den would not be able to see if someone were standing or on the top of the stairs. This gave us kids a little advantage. We could sneak back from bed to the top of the stairs, sit down quiet-like, and watch television without our parents below even knowing we were there. Eventually, one of us would sneeze or make a noise, and we'd get chased back to bed. When we went to bed, I never really went right to sleep. Most nights, I'd sit up in my bed in the dark and quietly play. If I heard my parents' footsteps outside the closed bedroom door, I'd quickly scramble back under the covers and pretend to sleep in case they opened the door and peeked in. Eventually, I dripped off to sleep, sometimes around 8 or 9 o'clock. During those early childhood years, one constant in my life was a recurring nightmare about an old woman who hid in my closet and would only come out at night to drag me in. She had black moles all over her face, black lips, long black fingernails, and beady little eyes. Her scraggly hair hanging around her face, she'd slide out of that closet, creep over to my bed, and yank me out by the legs. Sometimes I'd be dreaming about being in other places, like in a store or out playing somewhere, and she would show up, an unwelcome guest, to drag me away, her wicked cackle echoing in my head. As she dragged me, she used those long fingernails to tickle torture me. Because of her wicked laugh, and being the child that I was, I always called her Hee-Hee. My siblings teased me about it. I was the youngest of 3 children, so that was inevitable. But I thought the name was fitting and definitely not meant to be humorous. If my childhood nightmares weren't frightening enough, my waking hours were no less creepy, especially at night. On many occasions, I was awakened, not knowing why, and I'd lay there listening to the stillness of the night. Before long, a sound would reach my ears. I heard my name called out softly by a female voice. Kevin. Kevin. It sounded as if someone were standing on the other side of the house, gently calling out. This voice definitely did not belong to my mother. This would occur around midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. The voice beckoned as if it wanted me to throw back my covers, leave the safety of my room, and allow it to carry me away. Clenching the covers tight around me, I'd squeeze my eyes closed and try to block it out. Eventually, the sound always ceased and I'd drift off to sleep. I never told my parents about this, but I did share it with my sister Tracy. She confirmed that she too sometimes heard the voice calling her name. We did not know who the voice belonged to, but we figured it smart to ignore it. We also realized we shared another common occurrence. Sometimes at night, before I drifted off to sleep, or if I woke during the night, I sensed that someone was standing at the foot of my bed, even though I saw no one there. Right after, I'd feel my bed gently shake, as if someone were standing at the end, holding the footboard and jostling it from side to side. My sister had the same experience in her bed at night. Early one Saturday morning, Tracy told me of another chilling encounter. She awoke that morning very early, around 6:30. The bedroom I shared with my brother was located at the end of the hallway in the original part of the house. My sister's bedroom was located on the left side of the hallway near the end. Since her bedroom door sat near ours, she could see if someone came into or went from our bedroom. Both bedroom doors happened to be open at the time so that heat could flow through our rooms. She sat up in bed and, just by instinct, looked out her door at the hallway. Morning sunlight spilled out of my bedroom doorway from my window within, and she could see it spilling out across the floor of the hallway as it did every morning. However, this time something appeared out of place. A shadow, the exact form of a person, crept across the floor, disappearing into our room, as if someone had just entered through the door and their shadow was being cast on the floor behind them. Thinking it was one of us returning to bed from perhaps visiting the bathroom, Tracy crawled out of bed and crept into the hallway. As she entered the hallway, she realized that she had not heard the toilet flush. Peering into our bedroom door, she saw both my brother and me fast asleep in our bunk beds and sawing away at our dreams with our snores. As she thought about the shadow she'd seen, the realization also sunk in that the shadow had been tall, like that of a man, so it could not have been one of us. Looking around at our room, she saw no one else in sight. Footsteps were another occurrence in our house. Mainly at night, we heard them creaking across the floor of the hallway outside our rooms. Whoever or whatever it was paced slowly as if it were keeping watch. We shared this with our parents, but they always contributed it to the sounds of the house settling at night. Some nights, the footsteps sounded from the attic floor above us. And what frightened us the most about this was knowing that there was only 3 or 4 feet of space between the attic floor and the attic ceiling, which was not enough room for someone to stand up and walk, yet we still heard the footsteps walking. As we grew up, and with the new addition of the downstairs den and upstairs master bedroom that were later added to our house, my siblings and I switched rooms once our parents moved into their new bedroom in that new part of the house. I took my sister's old room, she took my parents' old master room, and our brother remained in the bedroom that we once shared. The early childhood nightmares I once experienced now ceased, and so did a lot of the incidents we experienced. The house seemed so quiet, but only for a time. During the summers of our early childhood, my siblings and I spent the weekdays at our grandmother Mildred's house while our parents were at work. As we got older and my siblings grew into their teen years, we were allowed to stay home during the summers and they'd watch after me. Of course, we had chores assigned to each one of us to complete. However, we still had a lot of fun together. Both my siblings were older than me, So in the summer, after I turned 13, my brother and sister took on summer jobs and went to work while I remained at home by myself. It was during these times when the incidents returned, and I realized the ghostly happenings in our house weren't confined to just the nights. They happened in broad daylight. The most memorable encounter during the day occurred one summer around 1993. We had a little Shih Tzu dog named Corky that my parents had given to us as a Christmas gift a few years before. Corky was a lovable furball and constant companion. He followed me from room to room, always wanted to play. During the summer days, we'd relax in the coolness of the downstairs den, me lying on the sofa and Corky stretched out on the floor next to me. As I mentioned before, my parents' master bedroom sat directly above the den in that new part of the house. As we lay there, Corky and I, with the TV on, I heard a loud thud from the master bedroom upstairs. It practically shook the ceiling above me. Corky and I both sat up simultaneously. The sound was soon followed by thunderous footsteps. They raced across the floor of the bedroom above. Corky let out a bark. The footsteps reached the bedroom landing and pounded down the stairs to the landing between the kitchen and the stairs to the den. That is where the footsteps suddenly stopped. Corky leaped up from the den floor and, being the little hero he was, hurried to the bottom of the stairs. As I described before, a wall extended out in the den, separating the stairs from the den, so I could not see who or what was standing at the top of the stairs above. Corky sat down at the foot of the stairs and stared up at whatever it was. He barked furiously, bared his teeth, and growled like a savage beast. His fur rippled all over his body. After a few minutes of this, calmness overcame him, and he grew quiet. Cocking his head from side to side, he continued gazing up the stairs. I remained frozen on the couch, watching all of this, listening and waiting to see what would happen next. I heard no further sound from the stairs. Corky finally looked over at me and grinned with his little teeth sticking out. As hard as this is to believe, Corky knew how to grin. He'd spread his little lips, just jut out his bottom teeth, and it looked just like a grin. He wagged his little tail and looked at me with that grin as if to say, "It's okay now. I chased it away." My mother kept a long metal fingernail file in a drawer built into the sofa. It had a pointed end and resembled a long knife. It looked like it could really do some damage if it was used as a weapon. So I decided to carefully slide it out of the drawer and use it. Keeping my step to a slow, nervous pace, I made my way to the stairs, peered around the wall, and looked up. Nothing was there. I searched the whole house, top to bottom, room to room, closet to closet, shower to shower, with that fingernail file poised in my hand ready, searching out every possible hiding place, because of course I thought maybe an intruder were in the house. I even mustered enough courage to go upstairs to the master bedroom for a look around. I found nothing. Nothing had fallen over. Nothing appeared out of place. No sign of a break-in. Absolutely nothing. On another occasion, I was walking down the hallway to my bedroom. My door stood open where I always left it. I walked right up to the door, and before I could enter it, it slammed shut in my face. I was alone in the house, or so I thought, so my first reaction was that an intruder had gotten in. A few years before, in the fourth grade, I'd studied Taekwondo, and so automatically I went into my karate stance, as I'd been trained to do, and prepared myself for an attack. I reached out for the bedroom doorknob. Taking it in my hand and slowly turning it, I let the door gently pop open. And then I yelled and kicked as hard as I could so that it flew open with a crash. It crashed open to an empty room. I leaped inside, rushed around, checking the closet and under the bed, ready to handle any attacker who might jump out. However, I found nothing. The bedroom window was closed. The air conditioning was not on at the time. There was no draft in that room. So what caused that door to close all by itself? There were other occasions where I'd return to my room and find the light on where I'd turned it off before. Other times, I'd return to my dresser drawers to find them pulled open where they'd been closed before. Items moved around or disappeared with no explanation, only to turn up later in a different location. There were also times when Corky sat on the landing of the stairs outside the kitchen door and gazed up at the master bedroom door as if he were waiting for something to come out. If things weren't strange enough, it was around this time that the faces appeared. One night I was taking a bath, lounging in a tub of warm bubble bath, when I looked over at the bathroom door. In the original part of our house, all the doors to the closets, bedrooms, and bathroom were cut from the same grain and stained brown, with the grain clearly visible. The grain in the wood of each of those doors made wavy lines down the door and created different shapes. As a boy, I used to lay there in the tub soaking in the warm, sudsy water and count the lines of grain that ran down the bathroom door. On this particular evening in question, I noticed a different and obvious shape I'd never seen before. Dead in the center of the door, the lines of the grain suddenly parted, and in the center appeared the shape of a man's face. The image appeared very distinct, with two eyes, a nose, a mouth wide open as if in a scream, hair combed down on the forehead, and even a teardrop pouring from the right eye. Another shape in the form of a large drop seemed to roll down one side of the forehead. Could it be blood? I immediately called it to my family's attention. On further inspection of the bedroom and closet doors in the original part of the house, we found the same exact image on every one. On some of the doors, the image appeared in two places, and on some it appeared on both sides of the door. None of these doors contained such an image before. Where did it come from? Why was it there now? What did it mean? Whose face was it? Tons of questions flowed through my mind. Taking my camera, I made photos of every door. When I showed the pictures to friends, they all had chills. Some came to the house to see the faces for themselves, but one look was enough for them. My parents, being the skeptics, believed it was only the way the grain of the wood formed, naturally. But this did not explain why the faces weren't there before and suddenly appeared out of the unknown at the same time. Those faces remained on the doors for the rest of the time we lived there. Some of the appliances in our house acted strangely. Once my dad was cooking on the stove in the kitchen and preparing a pot of water to boil. Once the water came to a boil, he set the temperature for the stove eye down to simmer and walked away for a minute. When he returned to the stove, the knob had turned by itself from simmer back to high. No one else was in the kitchen at the time. On another occasion, late one night around 11 o'clock, I was in my bedroom brushing my teeth and preparing for bed when my alarm clock went off. I hurried into my bedroom and cut it off. I had the alarm set for 6:30 in the morning, which was my usual time to wake up and get ready for school. Upon checking it, the alarm time was still set for 6:30, yet there it was going off at 11 o'clock in the evening for no reason. This happened on a few more occasions with no logical explanation in sight. As the years passed, the occurrences seemed to wind down again. Eventually, I moved out of the house while in college and to my first apartment across town. One more occurrence did happen one holiday when I returned home for the weekend. I was in my early 20s and had planned to spend Friday and Saturday night of that holiday weekend with my parents. My sister's old bedroom was converted to a guest bedroom as she had moved off and gotten married. So this is where I slept. In the early hours of the morning, long before daylight, I awoke to light footsteps in the hallway. The bedroom door was closed, but I heard it softly open and then close again. Sitting up in bed, I squinted at the darkness, attempting to see who had come in, but I saw no one there. Getting up from bed, I went to the door, opened it, and looked out into the hallway, but no one was there. When daylight came and the household was up and bustling around preparing breakfast, I asked my parents if either of them had come into my room in the early hours that morning, perhaps to check on me. Of course, the response from both of them was, "No, not me." This was my final ghostly experience in our house. A few years later, my parents sold that house and moved to Walker County in Alabama, and I've never been back to the old house since they moved. Sometimes I wonder if the current family who resides there now has their own experiences, or have the ghosts perhaps moved on. I wonder if the faces are still there on the doors, if that woman's voice calls out in the night, if those footsteps still pace at night, or race around in the daytime, or if the Native American spirits still run past the windows. Maybe the house has finally settled down for good. Even if it has, my memories of those strange occurrences will never die. And now, dear listeners, you can understand what piqued my interest in the paranormal early in life. From there, I just became so engrossed with it. I started reading books about other people's experiences, ghostly happenings, and I couldn't help but want to go out and explore other haunted places to see what kind of experiences they had. I've run into some very strange activity in my adventures. I've run into some very positive, friendly spirits, and I've met some that were not so friendly. That is why I always encourage people, leave the paranormal investigation to the experienced professionals. If you want to become an investigator yourself, hey, we'd love to have you. See if you have maybe a already seasoned paranormal team in your neighborhood, in your town or county or state, and contact them to see if they're looking for new members. Go through the proper training procedures and make sure to educate yourself on the paranormal as much as you can before you try to venture out and do it on your own. Just make sure to educate yourself, and as I said at the beginning of this, always have respect for the living and for the dead. Don't go looking for trouble, because as I said before, you might find it, or worse yet, it might find you. I hope you enjoyed my first broadcast. I know I enjoyed sharing my story with you, and I look forward to sharing other stories of the macabre and strange and supernatural each week right here on this podcast, The Haunted Collection. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week. Until then, happy hauntings!